Chapter 40. The Clans Unite. The Plan. For the next month, Yosef made time each day for Aeneas and personal time for him and Mera, except for those minutes when he focused on preparing for the conclave. They continued living at Keelan Manor, with the others from their house staying in guest cottages. A room in Keelan Manor was designated for half to full day meetings planning an attack on Preti, the manor site chosen to let Kalish avoid moving more than necessary. They assumed the clans would finally agree to unite, and the conclave would approve the plan. There were issues of command structure that Yosef didn't have answers for, but he figured he had no control over that aspect, leaving it to Kalish. The meeting's participants varied. Yosef, Dennis, and Vordig Lewis almost always attended, with Kalish, Peter Kenrick, and Malron Lewis taking part, depending on the topic and status of specific aspects of the plan. Mera attended most meetings, as both scribe and participant, and Owel Brell, the Adrisian in charge of the MIU, became a regular contributor. As Yosef had predicted, the scope of his ideas initially startled the others. It took a full 6 day and hours of convincing before everyone agreed this was no time for half measures. Yosef had to justify each part of what he formulated, and they modified many details. However, the three central parts remained, and Yosef summarized them at the end of the first 6 day of meetings. He stood next to a blackboard, another of his introductions, and pointed to three bullet points. First, we have to cut out the two allied clans, Selfsil and Iwal. This will result in the Narthani pulling all their fighting men back into Preti province. We also can't leave potentially hostile forces in our rear when we go after Preti city. We would send large Ragoon and artillery units south-southwest from Moreland province to cut off Selmore, the Selfsil capital, from Preti province. We have reason to believe the Selfsilese are not enthusiastic allies of the Narthani, so there's a good chance they'll capitulate without serious resistance, if they find themselves greatly outnumbered. It's also likely the Narthani will pull their own men back into Preti, rather than risk them against a large clan force. Such a withdrawal will give Selfsil more reason to surrender without fighting. Iwal is more difficult to predict, since they've appeared more eager to be Narthani allies. However, they've lost enough men already at the Battle of Moreland City, and had so much of their province razed by our two raids that they might not resist. We've gotten reports of more and more Iwalese crossing borders into neighboring provinces and asking for asylum. But as I said, the level of Iwalese resistance is hard to predict. Assuming we isolate Preti province, we'll pursue the next two objectives at the same time. We will amass 40,000 dragoons, all the cannon we can muster, and extensive logistic support on the Preti border. The Narthani will want to concentrate civilians in Preti City and the larger towns. Our forces will cut behind Preti City, moving south and isolating the city from the rest of the province. This objective serves two purposes. It prevents the province from providing materiel and manpower support to the Narthani military, and tens of thousands of prisoners could serve during any negotiations. The third objective is to invest Preti City. This means surround the city and dig fortifications so the Narthani can't leave. We must be prepared for a long siege, months, possibly longer. They won't be able to bring in more food, but we assume they've stockpiled enough to last quite a while. We will also divert three streams that flow through the city, although there are wells, and they can try to dig more. After the only major Narthani forces left are behind Preti city fortifications, we'll start digging trenches deep enough to get closer to their defenses, while providing protection from musket and cannon fire. We'll try to avoid a direct assault. but the trenches will let us get close enough to use the siege mortars I've described. The first ones are being planned for casting as we speak, and should be testing in 2 6-days. We're also renewing our efforts to work out fuses for shells. I believe it will be some time before we have contact explosive shells for cannon, but the mortars have lower shot velocities, and their short barrels give the option of manually lighting the fuses before firing. We also hope to work out lighting the fuse when the flame sweeps around the projectile. I'm optimistic we can figure it all out. Once the mortars are close enough, we'll start a continuous bombardment of the city. Even if the fuses are unreliable, enough should work that we'll slowly destroy the city and fortifications. As this happens, we'll look for opportunities to dig our trenches closer and closer to theirs. At some point, they'll be forced to pull back in a shrinking defensive line. I hope that well before the city is totally leveled and everyone inside is killed, the Nathani recognize the inevitable, and we can negotiate their leaving the island. I also fervently hope it doesn't come down to us having to storm even weakened defenses. While I understand the wish to crush them completely, we have to remember that the goal is for them to leave. The sooner they do, the fewer clansmen will be killed. Hetman Keelan and Vortig Lewis voiced concern that the Nathani might not sit behind walls during a siege and might sally against our entrenchments. It's possible. But they would take casualties in any such attacks on defensive positions. I don't believe they have enough men to do this. They would have to use most of their men in cannon, which would leave the city vulnerable. 30,000 clansmen could hold off their army, while another 10,000 sack pretty city, so I believe they'll be stuck in the city. They also must know they would face a much different foe than before. They would have to factor in that we have cannon and more experience. In a few months, we might outgun them, even if they're better at maneuvering. "It all sounds so logical, Yosef," said Mera, pausing in her recording. "But it assumes a lot."
"These three objectives are only the strategic goals, as Yosef terms them," said Kulich. "The tactics, or how we actually go about achieving those three objectives, will be worked out later."
"Even those will change with circumstances," said Dennis. "The fog of war is another of Yosef's favorite expressions, along with, no plan survives the first shot. Still, we have to start somewhere. And these three objectives will guide us."
Oro City. This time, the trip to Oro City took 4 days. Kulish's leg was healing, but it would be several more months before the medicans allowed him to try using a peg extension on his leg stump. A modified carriage made the trip as easy as possible for the headman, and the driver took care to minimize jostling. Most of the rest of the Keelan delegation rode in a second carriage, with each man taking turns keeping Kulich company and continuing discussions.
"The All-Clan Conclave itself was almost anticlimactic. Kulich had warned Yosef not to get his expectations too high, and that it might take many days of arguing and posturing before they made any major decisions. Yosef girded himself for a grueling time and multiple frustrations. Therefore, they were both caught by surprise when Hetman Oros called the conclave to order and asked Kulich for a statement. Kulich was helped by Vortig Lewis and Dennis Vega to a chair on an elevated 2-foot-tall platform facing the rest of the conclave, so everyone could see him clearly. Kulich only got to the sentence, "I propose we commit here and now to eradicate the Nathani presence on Cadellium," before exultations drowned out his next words. He stopped, stunned, until Oros let the clamor die and called the headman to order. The destruction of the Swavebroke capital Shulik, the attacks on 3 headmen, The two raids now viewed as successes, and the killing of an Arthani colonel swept away any remaining resistance to the idea of making a unified effort against an Arthani. Enthusiasm tempered only slightly when Yosef presented the three-objective proposal devised in Kernford. Not that there weren't questions, comments, and arguments, but they occurred over details, not the fundamental plan. Granted, those details took them the next 3 days to settle each point to the satisfaction of enough hetmen to move on to the next point. But settle they did. At the conclusion, Yosef held out one qualm on the issue he knew would cause major problems. Command. A majority of clans favored a single overall command structure, to be worked out later. But there were enough holdouts for each clan maintaining total control of their own men to block that part of Yosef's proposal. The vote was 12 clans to 6, short of the number required by conclave rules for a compulsory decision. College put a hand on Yosef's forearm when he was about to object to the vote. "Not now, Yosef," he whispered. "We've come farther than I dared hope. Wait for what comes next." Hetman Oros then asserted that events might dictate the need to make decisions faster than they could achieve via conclaves. The Stanton Farkish Hetman made strong statements in support. By a 16-2 vote, it was approved that future votes could be held via semaphore, with the Seaborn clan's vote to be cast by their hetman's heir, a son who would reside in Pewit province, and who would attempt to stay in monthly contact with his father on the Seaborn Islands off the Cadellium northwest coast. "Now we only need to convince 4 clans to change their vote," whispered Kulich. "Several are already wavering or need more time to think. Once things are in motion, some of the holdouts will recognize the necessity and not want to be considered obstructionists. I think best we don't get into too rancorous of discussions about your ideas of command, since some hetmen consider you a Keelander and already resent too much Keelan influence. Oro, Stent, Farkish, and I will continue working on the other hetmen." Yosef sat back in his chair, nursing admiration for the connivance of his father-in-law with the other hetman, and hoping Kulich was right in his assessment and that the clans had enough time. The immediate action for all clans remained clear. Fighting men were to be organized into Yosef's unit hierarchy. The clans that wished to would train on developing mixed clan units. Firearms, gunpowder, and cannon production would be ramped up where already in production and expanded to other provinces wherever practical. In Yosef's view, perhaps the most important action was that the hetman charged him with expanding his proposed campaign plan against the Arthani. Although he had no formal authority, the charge came with the expectation that all clans would provide him with whatever assistance he required. Each hetman would review the plan, which reminded Yosef of the inability of the European Union on Earth to take almost any action, because one member could veto any decision. However, Kulich's assurance that the 4 hetman conspirators would work on getting those 4 additional votes left Yosef no option but to trust that they would work out a central command in the next 4 to 5 months, the target date to launch the all-out attack on Pretty Province. "Pretty City. It should be soon," said Okunakuyan. He sat with his wife on a second floor balcony of their villa, enjoying the evening and the breeze coming off the ocean. They often sat together like this, if dinner was still being prepared. The difference now, and for the last 6 days, was the increased number of guards since Memis Erdelin had been killed. Reports estimated that the assassins numbered fewer than 10, but because the Arthani strike teams had 20 members, Akuyan had ordered that all senior staff from Major on up, and Administrator Tuzir and Assessor Hizer, maintain 20 guards at all times. It often made for more orchestrated movements and unavoidable awkwardness.
"That's what you've been saying for the last month," said Rabia.
Akuyan smiled. "And it's just as true this time as all the others you so rudely reminded me of."
"I'd ask if you had any more clues about how the High Command will respond to your report," said Rabia, "if I thought you had any more idea than all the other times I've asked."
"I know you say I shouldn't worry, since there's nothing either of us can do about it. But, well, you know."
"Yes, dear, I know. This time, I really believe it will be soon. If it's not soon, we might find ourselves in serious trouble."
"Do the others share your concern?"
Rabia knew Oaken listened to his subordinates, and she probed to know whether he had just Divolta's view alone or the consensus opinion. "Izer does, and I think to Zeren's Alpha. The colonels in Kalkan are having a hard time getting around the idea that the clans are a serious threat to even Predi City. The two raids surprised us. Either the clans didn't expect to do as much damage as they did, or what I suspect, they did exactly what they intended. Showed us they could do it and let it serve as a warning against further attacks by us on clan territory. Those two raids were only about 1,000 men each, but I can't ignore the possibility it could have been 10,000, which is something well within the clan's capabilities. With 10,000, the northern attack might not have been a raid, but a serious attempt to destroy the 1,500-man garrison at Hanslow and neutralize the Iwal clan. The result of the southern raid could have been worse. With 10,000 men, they could have ravaged much of Predi province before we could stop them. Then, with their greater mobility, they could have avoided a battle and withdrawn to threaten a repeat any time they wanted. I'm afraid I'm reduced to hoping the clan leaders aren't aware of the opportunities. You've told me how you've been working on the scenario where you slowly pull all troops and civilians into the fortifications here in Predi City. Do you think the time is here for that? Asked Rabia. Not yet. And I hope it doesn't come to that. Only Tuzir and Ketan are involved in the planning. Tuzir wants to wait at least another few 6 days before we decide if it's a plausible option, and I've agreed. I've ordered intense patrols as far out as possible. If the clans start pushing our patrols back aggressively toward Predi, I'll be forced to activate the consolidation here, if we're to get most of our people behind the fortifications.